Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Jayant Bhandari. Jayant is constantly traveling the world to look for investment opportunities, particularly in the natural resource sector. He advises institutional investors about his finds. Earlier, he worked for 6 years with U.S. Global Investors in San Antonio, Texas, a boutique natural resource investment firm, and for 1 year with Casey Research. He is also a follower of the Austrian School of Economics. Welcome, Jayant.
Thank you very much for having me here, Richard.
Great. I thought we'd begin with an update on India, what's happening there. You've written recently, it looks to be becoming like a police state as authorities try to do an implementation of eliminating cash. I think 86% of physical cash has been eliminated to date, and what the ramifications are of that on the economy.
Richard, India is becoming crazier by the day. In today's newspaper, the headline is about a bill having been presented in the parliament, which if passes, will require people to declare how many guests they are inviting to a wedding and how many dishes they can offer in a wedding.
Wow.
So government now wants to control your parties.
Wow.
This is indeed becoming a police state, and every day there is something crazy that comes up. In the last 2 weeks, Indian government has come up with two new regulations. One has already been imposed, which now makes it illegal for people to do transactions worth more than 300,000 rupees in cash. This is about 4,500 US dollars. And now remember, this is a country where more than 95% of consumer transactions are cash-based transactions. There is very limited internet, very limited electricity in that country. How does this add up? I don't really understand. But what does add up is that this country is becoming increasingly crazy and it's becoming a police state. It will end up becoming a banana republic, however, because they don't really have the capability to impose a police state in that country. The economy is stagnating everywhere in the country. People are losing jobs. Food prices have fallen quite a bit. Farmers are going to face horrendous economic problems. In a country where 50% or more of the population lives on daily wages of $1 or $2, Richard, it's very difficult to understand what this means. Living on $1 or $2 a day, this is what a vast majority of that country earns. Now, in that country, if you have an economic crisis, they go hungry.
And how are the people coping in the rural areas? I understand there's 650,000 rural villages in India, and many of them are not prepared to integrate readily currently into a digitized economy.
Well, they cannot. About a billion people of that country, which is probably 75 to 80% of that country, lives in rural areas. But even in towns, Richard, often there's no electricity. Only about 25% of the country is covered by internet. And when you have electricity, it usually doesn't work. Internet connection is very unreliable. So this cashless system is certainly not going to work. Now, in rural areas, there might be a bank among 50 villages. So these people might need to walk 30 to 50 kilometers to take their cash out of the bank if the government forces them to deposit their cash in the banks. Now, do you think, Richard, if you earn $1 or $2 in a day, would you have time to walk to the bank every day, perhaps 3 or 4 hours every day each way to collect your cash. Now, this is an impossible situation. It's outrageously stupid, but that's what Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi is trying to implement.
And are there any emerging trends? I know we talked about this one time before in terms of inflation versus deflation. Like, do you see parts of the economy in terms of consumer prices in one sector, maybe in food prices versus regular consumer items? Are there any emerging trends that are now showing, as a result of this implementation?
Well, this has completely disturbed the economic structure of the country, of course. What did happen is that the food prices have fallen quite substantially in the last 2 or 3 months. Now, this is food prices, if they fall because of excess supply, that's always a good thing. But these food prices have fallen not because there's excess supply. Food prices have fallen because there has been a significant reduction in demand. Now, Richard, that tells you only one thing, and that is that poor people can no longer afford to buy food. A lot of these people are going hungry. Now, farmers, of course, can't make money because food prices have fallen too much. Food prices have fallen so much that some of the farmers cannot even pay for transportation costs of the vegetables they grow, which means that they are dumping their vegetable produce in their villages. Now, if they dump their produce and if they can't sell it for cash, this means that in the next cycle, which means in the next 3 or 4 months, these farmers will not be producing food. There might be a serious shortage of food developing in the country. You can be assured of one thing, however, that food prices will be much higher 3 months from now than they were before demonetization started.
And are people employing techniques like bartering to compensate for that?
Absolutely. In the smaller villages, the smaller towns, people have taken up bartering. But Richard, this really doesn't work. Bartering only works well with tribal people, maybe to some extent with rural people. In the modern economy, where you have to buy cell phone connections, you buy cars, internet, electricity, bartering really doesn't work. There's no way you can do all the transactions through bartering.
Wow. Yeah, we'll need to monitor what's happening because India could be the test case as other countries consider the same type of implementation.
Yes, indeed. And this is going to fail, though, Richard, mostly because Modi wanted to impress the Western audience that he is very pro-market, he is very advanced, he is ahead of the game, and he will fail so badly that the good thing for you and me is that his cashless approach is going to fail, and that will hopefully delay Western government's approach to go cashless for a bit. But and that's in a way a good thing for the Western society.
So let's move the discussion to how can investors protect themselves given this environment? We just talked about the like a war on cash. We have trends in extensive money printing by central banks, devaluations, loss of purchasing power, excessive debt, distortions caused by central bank policies, government regulations, such as the Dodd-Frank Act or other regulations. So perhaps one concept that we've been discussing a lot is the using of the Austrian School of Economics, the principles from that body of thought, as a school of economics, initially formulated back in 1870 from Karl Menger. And is it possible to use those principles in today's environment? Does it make sense to do investing? Thoughts on that?
Richard, Austrian School of Economics is the only school of economics. I don't even know why we call it Austrian School of Economics.
Okay.
This is the only rational economics that's available. Keynesian economics is mysticism. It's superstitions. It's irrationalities. Keynesian economics believes that just by running the printing press, you can generate wealth. Now, that's utterly irrational and superstitious. So the only way for me to understand the world is through the understanding of Austrian economics, which is just nothing but common sense, irrational economics.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. It does help to identify distortions in the economy, in the investment environment, and in particular areas where there may be too much leverage, too much debt, in the economy and in the investment environment. So how can investors apply that body of knowledge to investing?
Well, firstly, we have been talking about the cash, the fiat currency system. And the reality is that cash does not have any inherent value. Its value is based on regulatory edict. So as far as possible, investors, I think, should stay outside the currency system, which I would, except for the next few months of my expenses, I don't like to keep my money in cash. I like to invest my money, and I like to keep my money in jurisdictions that I have more trust in compared to the jurisdictions I live in. And then I like to invest my money in other instruments, which means that I internationalize myself. I try to stay outside the monetary system, which means that I keep minimal possible cash in hand and minimal possible cash in banks. So that is how I think you can try to protect yourself. There's, of course, no guarantee. You have to diversify yourself in several ways, but they are staying as much outside cash and banking system, the better it is for you.
Mm-hmm. And actually, yeah, one principle of investing using the Austrian School of Economics is called the indirect exchange method. Ty Andros has talked about this in the past. He's a fund manager that takes the same approach. And what he defines it as exchanging something of uncertain value, fiat money, for something of certain value, real wealth, that cash flows. So using that, how can investors identify opportunities today?
Richard, for example, there are property companies in Hong Kong and Singapore that are trading for 50% of their net present value. These companies offer you anything between 5 to 10% dividend yield. The earnings yield is anything between 10 to 20% in these companies, or even more than 20% in some cases in these companies. Now, when you focus on companies that provide you very good downside support because they are already trading for 50% discount to their inherent value, and you invest in companies that have almost assured revenue and profitability because they lease out their properties for long-term tenancy, this means that you not only protect your downside, you put yourself in a position where you can continue to make a profit over at least the short and medium term. This, for me, is how I do value investing. I do not like to look at charts. I do not like to look at trends. I do not like to know what other people are doing, except when I want to understand what the market is thinking, which might actually help me buy something cheaper and sell something at an even higher price. But I prefer not to look at the market apart from the fact when I need to take a decision on when to buy and when to sell.
Yeah. And I think the goals of investing that can be met using the Austrian School of Economics put a strong emphasis on getting yield and preserving purchasing power, as well as creating real wealth. In that light, this indirect exchange method can be used to identify companies, businesses that have little or no debt and little or no leverage. And then you're able to leverage off of the high discounted cash flows that these businesses have, you know, given little debt, little leverage that they have, you know, for getting yield. Do you not agree?
I fully agree with that, Richard. And also, there is so much of similarity between value investing and Austrian School of Economics. A lot of people consider these to be completely different school of thoughts, but really, in my view, both are rational ways of, one is how to invest your money, one is an understanding about economics, and both of them have a huge amount of overlap. You want to protect your downside, you want to buy something that is trading for much cheaper than its inherent value, and you want to invest in instruments that provide you a decent yield, a much higher yield than what the bonds offer you.
Exactly. And another principle is store of values. So that this is emphasized in terms of investing in real assets, assets that can preserve purchasing power, stores of value. So what would these some of these be, like precious metals?
Precious metals is a great way to store your value. And that could be in terms of precious metals, or it could be in terms of ETFs, although I prefer storing physical gold in your personal possession. You could invest in properties. You could invest in property companies. A lot of property companies tend to trade for a significant discount to their inherent value. And you might prefer to invest in these companies and these properties in jurisdictions that are not in your own country. You might like to do that in Hong Kong or Singapore or Dubai, places which have a very good history of protecting private property. So you might want to do it that way. And in fact, Richard, the reality is that United States, even today, is a place where property rights are respected. And that is exactly why Chinese and Indians and other Asians and Africans, people with a lot of cash, like to buy properties in Canada and the US. So, yeah, diversify yourself internationally and invest in instruments that are in your personal control.
Do you see any areas, any countries with in the emerging markets with specific opportunities in sectors that make sense, you know, given using the principles of the Austrian School of Economics?
Well, I personally don't like much of the emerging market sector. I like China, but perhaps it's the only emerging country that I like. The problem, Richard, is that I have for the last 30 years invested in mining companies. And this is the problem I have faced in Brazil, rest of South America, and specifically in Central Asia and Africa. The problem is, when my company makes money, they steal my money anyway. And when the commodity prices are down, I lose money. So whatever happens, I lose in either case. And that is the reason why I prefer to stay away as much as possible from emerging markets. Although, because I work in the mining industry, I travel around the world. I travel to a lot of these emerging markets, and I enjoy learning from why they stay poor and what we can do in the West to avoid becoming poor.
And how does all this change, this approach to investing, given a Trump world? So the new U.S. President, Donald Trump, his policies, how can they potentially affect regulations, investments, corporate taxation? Thoughts on that?
Richard, I for sure have been very impressed with Trump. Now, one does not necessarily has to agree with his specific policies or all his policies. What I'm very impressed is with the fact that he is trying to do what he promised to do. And I think in the modern political history, there is perhaps no other example in which a politician tried to do what he promised to do before when he was running for elections. I think he is trying to reduce regulations. I think he is trying to do things that improve America's position in the world. That tells me that if he actually succeeds in what he's trying, American economy might actually improve quite significantly. Now, the reality, Richard, is that America is really, even today, by far among the, or probably the best country in the world. Intellectually and in terms of economics, it's still among the best country in the world. And I like, Americans are great people. It's where you have the freedom of thought. It's a country where you have freedom of speech. It's a country where you have freedom to make money. And if Trump makes some of the changes necessary for this country, America can actually improve quite a bit.
What about potentially adverse effects on investments or the economy resulting from trade policies like protectionist trade policies, tariffs, border taxes, potential changes in trade policies with other countries?
Okay, so Richard, that's a gray area. In my view, as an Austrian economist, I do not like restrictions on trade. But the reality is that trade can be a gray area. And also, it might be a negotiating ploy that Trump has been using. Maybe he wanted to get Mexico to approve building a wall between Mexico and the U.S. by making the subject much bigger than it actually was, so that Mexico would ignore the key thing which was building the wall. Now, people might agree or disagree about building the wall. And again, as a libertarian, I like freedom of movement, but I also accept that a lot of immigration is creating a lot of problem for the Western world. And Trump is, in my view, quite correct in paying attention to immigration that's happening into the U.S.
Would any of those policies or effects, could they result in a stagflationary type condition where there's slowing growth but rising consumer prices?
Well, if it destroys the economy, that's entirely possible. But really, I don't see why that would happen. I don't see anything that he's doing is as destroying the economy of the United States. If he removes the regulatory burden from American businesses, it will actually make them more competitive. It will make it possible for Americans to produce, which they are currently producing in Mexico and China, even without having to impose tariffs on foreign goods. So it's entirely possible that you can actually reduce the prices, increase the profitability of American companies, and increase employment in the U.S., provided Trump continues to do what he's saying he will do. And I have never been more positive about a politician in my life. So I hope he does what he says he's going to do.
And would any of his policies take time to implement? Like, from not meeting expectations in terms of corporate taxation changes, do you see that as potential?
But I don't really understand how easy or difficult it will be for them to implement changes in taxation policy. There's, of course, a big problem with bureaucracy. Bureaucracy are the real rulers of any country, and they are very resistant to change. They are the most corrupt people because they have jobs for lives. and why should they change their behavior? A lot depends on what the bureaucracy does. But at the same time, Richard, there is still moral instincts left in the bureaucracy and people who work in the government in the Western societies. And there's a hope that they might allow Trump to make relevant changes in the taxes. It might take some time, but as long as he is taking the country in the right directions, companies and stock market and investments will respond to that.
Wow. And your forecast for short to medium term for the U.S. dollar and the U.S. markets?
I don't really, you can't really say what will happen in this fiat currency system where money is based on paper. It's based on regulatory edicts and governments can do whatever they want. But in my view, interest rates should improve in the U.S. going forward if Trump succeeds in doing what he does, which might mean that the stock market might suffer. It might be already priced for perfection right now. So if interest rates improve, the stock market might fall. That, given despite the fact that this would happen when Trump would have done the right things for the economy.
Yeah. That's great insight, Jayan. Thank you very much. And how can our listeners learn more about your work?
Well, all my writings and pretty much everything I do is on my website, www.jayantbhandari.com.
Great. Thank you very much, Jayan. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks very much for the opportunity, Richard.
Yeah, take care. Okay, yeah, thanks, Jayant. And let me know your schedule for next month, I guess. And then we can see if there's overlap, because, yeah, I'll probably be out of town for a few days.
The first week I'm in Toronto, and then I'm traveling until the 12th of March, and then I'm back here in Philadelphia for another 2 weeks. Then I'm in Singapore.
Okay, excellent.
Okay.
Great. Thanks, Jayan. Thank you very much.
Yes. Thanks a lot, Richard. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.